I'd like to call this meeting of the Taney County Commission, Monday, March 11, 2013, to order, and call on Rick Finley to offer an opening prayer. Mr. Finley.
Heavenly Father, we want to come before you this morning and thank you again, praise you again for the great God that you are. We again realize the great gift that you've given us through salvation, and thank you for that. We thank you for opportunities to serve you, Lord. We want to pray to Lord that you just be with the leadership of this county. Pray especially for these three men who are in charge here, that you be with them, give them guidance. Just hold their hearts in such a way that they be open to your guiding spirit, dear Lord. We pray for those that may be in harm's way, and lift them up to you, dear Lord, and not only them, but their families that may be lonely because they're away, dear Lord. Just lift them up to you, to just be with them. Thank you for watching over us. Thank you for this great area. Thank you for the place that you've provided us to live in. And these things we ask in your Son's name. Amen.
Amen. Mr. Strahan, if you'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any remarks from a commission member before we begin? We have bid award recommendations regarding steel culverts. Gentlemen, if you would join us. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Better.
Yeah, me too. Not much, though. Gentlemen, this is bid number 201302-211. For corrugated steel culverts, which we opened on Thursday.
Could you read that one more time?
Sure. 201302-211.
Thank you.
And we had received responses from three different companies: Metal Culverts Incorporated, Dickey's Culverts LLC out of West Plains, and VBROC. And we're prepared to make a recommendation based on those responses. I'll let Mr. Hayes have the honors.
Gentlemen, our recommendation is going to be for VBROC of Sedalia, Missouri, on metal culverts.
They were the low bidder by quite a wide margin. In fact, they were lower than last year's bid.
Motion to accept the recommendation of Road and Bridge for VBROC on metal culverts.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to accept the recommendation from Road and Bridge regarding the purchase of metal culverts and award that bid to VBROC. That's bid number 201302-211. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Erickson, next thing we have on the agenda is bid opening process.
Correct. I have prepared a written request and made copies for each of you if you'd like. There's a couple of different ways we can approach this. I have the state, a prepared written statement that I can read into the record and give each one of you a copy of. It's actually a modified version of an email that I sent out on March the 7th. This is actually more formal. It's a signed request.
I'd hope it's more formal. Quit talking about two grown men and a small boy up here.
That was a different email.
I
So,
thanks, Stacy.
I am prepared to proceed in whichever direction the commission would like me to move forward on, streamline or read. It's not too much.
Yes, it is. Let's.
Or would you like the streamlined version?
Let's just review for a moment.
Okay.
Here a couple of weeks ago, if I remember, you had a stack of bids, and this has happened on numerous occasions. And we watch you, along with whatever department you may be, whether it's the Sheriff's Department or whether it's Randy here with Road and Bridge or whomever it is that we're accepting bids from, to slice open all the bid packages, to set them aside, and then the County Commission asks you to take them, to sort through them, to build a spreadsheet for us and to come back generally with a recommendation to us for whatever it is that department is desirous of. And in essence, tell us what this does without us reading the entire document. I would like to scan the document into the minutes as a formal document and provide it to whomever would like a copy of it. But if you could highlight what's in it.
Certainly. Our current purchasing policy manual does not dictate by the letter that each and every bid that we handle in the purchasing department be open live in front of the commission. And in fact, when I investigated the processes by other counties, especially first-class counties, in this document I quote Boone County's policy verbatims, their routine bid processing, including RFPs and RFQs, are handled in the purchasing department with witnesses. Technically, it's still open to the public, and of course, the public is invited to attend all of those events. They open whatever their responses are, they document the details of those responses, and then at certain levels, they get on the commission agenda and bring their recommendations to the commission. Their policy dictates, and then this mechanism that I've made copies for each of you on dictates $250,000 or higher estimates on certain projects remain. Those would always go in front of their commission. I make a suggestion here that on routine bids, and I'm not even talking about a request for proposals or request for qualifications, only on the routine bids that we're handling where a certain set dollar amount is dictates the award process pretty much for the most part, best and lowest, as state statute recommends. And I would suggest that the purchasing department can handle all of those with the department requesting those bids to be present and other witnesses and all vendors who would like to attend, either here or in the upstairs room. We can do that on an off day. I'm looking at, and I've talked to some department heads about this, I'm looking at Wednesdays for the mundane routine bid opening process, documented accordingly, following these, mirroring these processes pretty close to what Boone County does, and then get on the agenda with bid recommendations for you all.
Or a spreadsheet,
right,
and or both, so that.
Oh yes, yes. The details of those responses would be well documented. Bid responses are considered official documents. I file those. I keep those on file, and they're available to the public on bids. When you have a set dollar amount, like in this case, we just opened culverts, or we opened them Thursday, and we awarded them. It was a set dollar amount. And that would be what I would classify as one of those routine bids that Randy and I could open in a different environment instead of taking the commission's time and categorize all those responses, document them, and then bring that recommendation process by itself to you all. I will also suggest in this document that you all set a level. Perhaps if we put out a bid, for instance, an example would be the roof repairs, and we see that might be an RFP that might exceed a certain dollar amount, $100,000, for instance, then we would still, I would still broadcast or put advertise those bids to be open in this forum as we're using now, our current cumbersome forum, I call it, method. And then there's another separate proposal in this document that I'll bring up when we're ready to hear about that.
So the vendors will be contacted. Obviously, through the first legal, you state that we're going to open these at such and such time, in such and such location, et cetera. I would add to that that if you would, when the media knows when you're going to do that, but if you would alert them that on Wednesday at 1 o'clock we're going to be opening bids for such and such, if in fact they want to be present for the slicing of those and getting ready to go through the process.
Quite that frankly, doesn't change. That's the way that we would continue to do it, right?
Quite frankly, it's it will relieve us during commission of watching you all just slice those open, stack them aside, and then we ask you to go do those things. So,
well, it's frustrating, you know, to try to rush that process, and when there's other folks here for, you know, issues, and they have to sit through that as well. That's I just don't see that happening in other jurisdictions or other entities.
As with everything, there's pros and cons to this. I understand the professionalism of what you're proposing, but I do understand the fact that there's a burden laid upon your shoulders of responsibility of bids when they come in, the timing of if someone has a bid there on time or if they don't. If it's in the mail, which you always go check in the mail when the bids are open, I think there's a better way to do it than what we're doing it here now. I see no problem with this. I don't know about the $250,000 mark. That seems rather high to me for, like you said, if the commission has something come up that has to do with like our roofing bid or our garage bid and things like that, that it be opened in the public's meeting.
To me, it just would respectfully disagree. To watch them slice those things open and set them aside, it's just, because they're done here, we rely upon this individual, whoever has that position, to present all of it to us correctly and promptly in the first place. I like the thought of whoever the department head is that's being represented to be present. You have to put that, you have to run the same legal notices.
Right. That wouldn't change. It's still our policy.
Or Brandon could be present for any of those openings that we want. But your question is, an amount of the 250, you think that should be something lower, that those bids would be open in front of the committee?
Yeah, and that's the Boone County.
What you're saying, I apologize.
That's the Boone County amount. I would suggest a lower amount as well, perhaps $100,000. You know, if we estimate a project or even a bid to exceed $100,000, then I would develop that process to continue as we've been doing these, you know, the larger ones, if the commission agrees with that.
Do you got an amount in mind?
That would be more suitable to me, either that or some other number that would be adequate to do so. I don't have any problem with what you're doing. I know that there's a certain amount of openness that we want to make sure that the public feels comfortable with the bid process. We know that it's open to the public. Very seldom do we have vendors even show up. Last week we had one out of the three. I think the week that you had nine, there was two showed up on location. Like I said, there's just pros and cons to each thing. If it's an improvement to the system to help us move along, as long as everybody's informed and knows that there's a bid opening and the time that you go through now, I'm fine with it, but I would like to lower the number considerably. What do you think, Brandon?
100,000. Excuse me, 100,000 is fine with me. And then some of the verbiage I think needs to be changed. Nothing major, just a few of the little to actually read it into the.
Actually, when when we get that spreadsheet up here, then I guess we could name all the vendors. Mm-hmm. Then.
So we could read it off the spreadsheet that they gave us last week.
And that would be adequate. That's the same thing that you're doing beforehand, except you don't have their bid or their recommendation on it. So
it's going to save them time and us time.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. If you want to go with 100,000
Will you work with Linda, come up with the verbiage, bring back to us as it would be put in the policy? I know what you have here, but is that all right, Dan?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Brandon? And then we can vote specifically on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Then, like I said, we can read. Yeah, I would just change some of the verbiage, change the level, the number.
Now, what's in here is the quoted Boone County policy.
So we're not Boone County, we're Haney County.
And with some notes, parenthetical notes I've made that I would change this, I would change that. They have a two-meeting requirement in front of the commission on anything over $250,000. You know, and obviously, when we make recommendations, we don't have a two-meeting process, regardless of the amount. So I would just say that we would continue in that vein, and I'll modify our written policies and get with who? Get with
Linda is the one that develops our policy, Sorensen.
Oh, okay.
HR.
Okay.
Do you, one thing that I would request, and I know that you mentioned it, you haven't mentioned here, the department head or representative from that department witnesses be available for all bid openings. This throws more responsibility on the purchasing agent than it does than the way we do it now. And then I would just want to make sure that.
Does it? I mean, because you're already doing this.
Well, the current policy requires the department heads to bring their issues to the purchasing department. They remain really in charge of the bid process. Gotcha. I assist in that. So with the way our current policy is written, I mean, they're even in writing, they're required to supply vendor suggestions, et cetera. So, but, of course, I've taken on a much larger role in assisting than when that policy was initially written a few years ago. So there's some other things in there that can use some adjusting and modification. But the department head they own the process, I mean, in writing. You have something you'd like to add?
Yeah, I had one note to bring up. If you're talking a dollar limit, say $100,000 on bid, depending on if we open it in a different format or open in front of you, some equipment we bid out a lot of times will go over that amount considerably, and we could get anywhere from six to a dozen vendors bidding on any particular piece of equipment, per se. So I just kind of keep that in mind.
And what will happen is, if that's the amount that we set, you'll come in here, you'll slice them open,
yeah.
We'll say take them, do a spreadsheet, and come back and tell us what you think about it, which is what we're doing now.
Yeah,
I think it's really helpful to me to spend our time chatting with you with the spreadsheet rather than just watching you open them. I'm real comfortable with this.
You tell me what you want the limit to be. Is it 100 or 150 maybe? He brings up a good point. There's some equipment that's higher.
Well, that's fine. We'll still be able to
work with Brandon on what initial things that he sees in there that he wants to talk with you about, different verbiage, and Linda. And then, is that okay, sir?
That's fine.
Okay. You have a second proposal?
I have a quickly part two, which in our current written policy, for dollar amounts, expenditures below the required state statute bid limit of $4,500 in the range of $500 to $4,499. We currently have a written policy that requires departments to reach out for three formal quotes. Now, the policy, as I brought to your attention when I first started this position quite a while back, does allow the purchasing agent, myself, some leeway to waive that when there are certain circumstances, which we run into certain circumstances quite frequently, where a certain item is rather unique, borderline, sole source, but it goes over, say, $600-$800 limit, and the department that's making that purchase comes to a screeching halt, calls me and gets me involved, and we go through all kinds of written documentation that substantiates one direction or another. Other counties, when I've had my meetings and trainings, et cetera, specific again here in Boone County, the limit for three quotes is $2,500 to $4,499. And for other first-class counties, it's at that level, which I have here in writing. But so my suggestion is, in order to recognize the fact that I've seen a very commendable, conscientious effort in all county employees when they begin the process to purchase these items that are below the bid limit, of checking with me and working with me, but yet they're somewhat subdued with that small $500 limit, which again was created when this policy was written in 2006, and I think it was created well before that. It's just kind of
so you're just wanting to change it from $500 to $1,500,
right?
That's the only change in it,
right?
You need a motion to approve that or accept the amendment, or move to approve the amendment to change our current policy of $500 to $1,500.
Is there a second? Second. Discussion.
Danny, do you have a question?
The only question that I have is, you have a list of vendors on small projects that where we go out for three quotes. I understand exactly what your complication is, especially when you run into a sole source provider or something breaks down and you have to contact different people because of this $500 limit. I understand that. I understand all the problems that go along with it. I also hear from contractors the fact that we weren't notified that such and such was going to happen. Well, I think they were, but they just didn't, as they do a lot of paperwork, I think that the oversight, or later on I'll check with them and they said, well, we didn't have time to bid that and just forgot about it or something like that. So I'm fine with it. I mean, I try to think.
Let me tell you how old I am. I remember when this was $50.
Yeah.
And
I do too.
Times have changed. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? And it was.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time doing things that we didn't need to be. I mean, it just. But right. That was what the law was. Or that's what the rule was at the time. More discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ron. Agenda request review.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nikki.
You'll notice there are four items on the request list.
Will you add to that for next Monday the issue that we just had with Mr. Erickson for the first part of bid openings proposal changes? Is that all right?
Mm-hmm. On number three, was that brought back up, or? And that was actually something I think Ron was dealing with, and then the individual didn't show up when it was supposed to, so I don't know if he even knew about it, or.
There were two issues, if I remember. The first issue was the comment and that you had made about the existing policy that regards noise. Whether or not we're going to chat about that. The second one was the issue regarding, really, I think, nuisance ordinance, but it also involved noise, which came from a gentleman through email. I've forgotten his name right now. But
well, let me give you some guidance on the noise construction ordinance that we had. I was no vote on that situation, so I can't bring it back before the county commission. As for a vote, that's what I'm saying. I wasn't in favor of it. I think it's the most ridiculous thing that I ever heard of in the economic times that we're in. But I can't bring it. One of you two gentlemen would have to bring that to the county commission.
Let me ask you a question if I can, and I know I'm interrupting you, and I apologize. I understand parliamentary procedure, and it has to be someone that was on the positive side of the motion being made, but as I look back, there were three commissioners, and there are two who are no longer sitting on this commission when that was made. So it seems to me that we have an issue with that, and perhaps we should seek legal counsel. But I don't have a problem discussing this, nor do I have a problem bringing it up for discussion.
If one of you guys asked for it to be brought up, then I think that it...
We just want to let you
it
vote.
It can go on the agenda. I can vote on it.
I'm just kidding.
Back up, but the fact is, as I heard the commissioner that brought it up said that he wished that he had brought it up for reconsideration. He mentioned that dozens of times, but he never did do it. And so here the county sets with a ordinance that where people could be fined for... labor work that they're doing out there at 7 o'clock or evening or morning. So,
let me clarify what I was saying, Dan. I believe you have the right to ask for it to be on the agenda. The question is, under parliamentary rule, you have a right to offer a motion that's contrary to the motion that you've already voted on in the past. So I believe you have every right to ask to put it on the agenda for discussion. It's just there is a question of whether or not you could make a motion at that time. That's my understanding of the issue.
Let me say this. I don't know whether either one of you feel the way I do about it or not. So
we'd have to have a discussion to find
that
out.
We'd have to have a discussion to find out. So
I don't care if it goes on the agenda.
Nikki, let's put it on the agenda.
Okay. Your preference this Thursday or next Monday?
I don't care. Are we going to separate it out from noise and then just have one for nuisance, or are we going to keep them?
I would like to talk about
noise.
I think that's what your issue is. This is on the books.
Okay.
And whether or not we retain, I think was his question before I left on that trip, this specific ordinance. You had made comment about that.
Yeah. That's next Monday.
Let's set it up for Monday.
Okay.
just have it as discussion regarding existing noise ordinance. It looks like that was signed October 8th, 2009.
Have you contacted on 1 and 4, those people to come in and visit with us about their issues?
I have not. They have asked to be on the agenda.
I have no problem with either one of those coming in and...
What about number 2?
Explaining their position.
Okay.
Are we going to do both? Are you suggesting 1 and 4? What is 4? Do I have something here? No. Says that they would like to have 15 minutes. It'll be to kick off the community health assessment. Right for Monday?
I'm fine.
Monday?
Yep. Monday also on number 1.
Okay.
Number 3, do we want to have a formal discussion at this time regarding nuisance? Both were on here. I'd like to chat with council again and see where they're at based on what
we're talking
about.
I think the nuisance was your issue. Or that was your correspondence with an email.
The gentleman didn't show up, Ron, that on the nuisance part that contacted you. So Brandon and I didn't handle that last Monday or whenever it was that you were gone.
Well, this has been ongoing, at least since I've come in, because there are a number of citizens that are concerned about. Matter of fact, there's well over 100.
Oh, there's over 200.
Over 200 cases. Issues that we have that have been brought forth to this commission and previous commissions that haven't been dealt with because we can't find the legal authority that would put teeth into an ordinance that the county commission would craft. But we've asked council to talk with other counties and see what's out there. So let's chat with them and then I'll take that one.
Okay. Also, I was notified by Randy Hayes and Bob Atchley they'd like to come before you gentlemen to discuss road standards.
Today, Randy, at 1 o'clock, when we're doing the staff departmental update, operations, road petitions, work session, can we also talk about that at that time? Or is it something you want separate?
I'd rather have it separate.
Okay. Monday? Or the following Thursday? Or?
This Thursday would work better if it's possible.
Right now we're not scheduled to be in on Thursday, but...
Let's try today, this afternoon.
Start it.
I'd like to do it before we have a planning and zoning meeting and you could bring the same issues up and talk about.
Specifically road standards.
The road kids still want the road
Bob?
Standards.
Bob?
And it's really an interpretation of a specific section of road standards.
Can you make that part of today's meeting?
Okay.
Number 2. This individual has specifically requested that he meet with the commission to discuss costs that he incurred and requests for county information.
Follow me.
If you want to... I guess the reason it's on here for this is for us to reply back because anybody can come to the county commission public hearing or public comment and make their comments toward this. He's wanting on the agenda for this to be where we can reply back in this situation. That's the only thing that I can figure that would be an agendized item for, because public comment is for anyone to step forward. I don't have any problem with it being agendized, other than I think it could be handled in a different form. If anybody has the right to request to be on the agenda, I don't know. How do you feel about that, Brandon? Do you think that we could handle it in a different form, or do you want to just go ahead and... I mean, if this has a comment directly asked to the commission, then we respond back if it's agendized, and if it's a public comment, we don't respond back.
You don't have to respond. All right, so it doesn't doesn't bother me one way or the other.
Doesn't make you any difference. Doesn't make put it on there difference. Then,
put it on Monday's agenda.
How would you like that listed?
Number two.
The title.
I'm sorry.
How would you like that title?
She was wanting to know how to title that certain.
Sunshine Law Request. Cost Request. I don't have a clue.
Costs regarding a Sunshine Law request. Anything else, guys? Nikki, anything else?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Accounts payable.
Previous meeting minutes.
I haven't gone over these yet. Let's see. If we could have a motion to postpone to the definite time of 1 p.m., I'll report that out first, if that's all right.
Move to, we'll be tabling it? Till 1.
Postpone to the definite time of 1
p.m. Postpone to the definite time of 1 p.m. for the previous meeting minutes.
Did you say minutes or the, that's fine. Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to postpone to the definite time of 1 p.m. previous meeting minutes. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. My apologies. I just hadn't got through those yet. Accounts payable.
Move to approve checks numbers 332763 through 332801 and 33803 through 332844. You're going to do warrants now?
You're going to hold that one.
Put that down.
What did you, what was your motion?
63 through 801 and then 803 through 844.
Is that holding the one that I had a question about?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve checks number 332763 through 332801 and 332803 through 332844. Warrants number 5756, 5758, and 59. Journal entry transfers as well?
Yes.
Journal entry transfer from transfer station to R&B,
and journal entry for paper usage. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. Motion carries. Is that this one? No.
He's out.
There's three of those.
Hold it and I'll get that for you. Actually, do you want to see if it's in the top of that tab?
Which one are they looking for? You got it. Okay.
Approval of payroll.
Move to approve payroll.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to approve payroll. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. University of Missouri Extension update. Good morning, Crystal.
Last month, we had a really busy programming month, which you can see on the programs presented. Really the most noteworthy, I just wanted to let you know how the VITA program is going. We have fewer volunteers this year, but we seem to be doing more returns, actually, than we did last year so far. Our appointments are filling up fast in our three locations here in Taney County, but we still do have room available. So people can still make some appointments. I think we're out till the very end of March and then the beginning of April for appointments at this point. So that program is going really well, really successful, serving a lot of citizens here in Taney County through that program. We are also, Extension redrew their region lines. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that took effect in January. As a result of that, restaffing and staffing plans are going on at this point through regional council. And so our county office is up really to get at least one new specialist out of that restaffing. As the, you know, the regions were redrawn, we lost some specialists to other, to other regions. We gained some, and so now we're just really assessing, you know, what program area are we lacking in that can serve Taney County, and then, you know, where is office space available for specialists that can serve the Southwest region as a whole. So our office, we are vacant from retirement. We have an office vacant, and so we are up for discussion on that. So I know Danny attended a meeting of ours where we did talk a little bit about what the county would like to see. So as this is a county-supported program, if there's any discussion that, you know, any thoughts or anything that you want me to take back to our regional council, and then, you know, that'll go all the way up to campus. So, you know, there's a lot of different areas, programmatic areas that we cover, and so just really looking at what people here in Taney County, you know, what we need assistance with, what people need assistance and education on here in Taney County is really what we're looking for. So,
have you had input yet from the Extension Council members?
We have. We had a discussion at one of our council meetings regarding this, what they would like to see. Out of that, we came up with a few responses. A 4-H specialist was one. Community development, which we had before, was another one. That was Wayne Dietrich's position that he retired. And then also an ag position also came up that we would, you know, that those would be the three that the main discussion points were around, were those three specialty areas.
So it will be a full-time specialist for Taney County?
It will be a full-time specialist, yes.
Excellent.
So if you have any input that you want me to take back, Danny's given some, but you're welcome to give more. And so if you see a need, please let me know. We'll be finalizing those staffing plans in April and then really trying to move forward with those by at least May. So any comments that you have that you want me to take back, let me know this month, and I'll make sure that they I believe our regional council meeting is on the 16th of March, and so I would take comments. If you had any, I could take them up to that meeting as well. We do have several other programs coming up. You know, for the county, we have the pesticide applicator training on March 14th. That'll be in Taneyville. We have a raising alfalfa program here in Forsyth at Dalton Farms, and then the dinners at Bradleyville Schools on March 21st. So two programs that are going on here directly in Taney County. And of course, people can contact our office for the VITA appointments as well, 417-546-4431. Any questions? I'd be glad to answer them.
So you think with the VITA program, you think with the lack of volunteers that you're going to be able to cover, because every year it's been a growing program with the numbers, but you think you'll be able to take care of it because of an early start, people?
I think so.
Notification.
We did get started, you know, at a good time this year. I think as we continue down our experience with this program, we get better as volunteers at the program itself, you know, utilizing the tax software and things like that. So the repeat volunteers help a lot because they bring a level of experience that enables them to do things a little bit faster. So, you know, I think just the knowledge level of our volunteers, I think, has gotten a little bit better, which might help in getting those done faster. And it really depends, too, on the types of returns that we do, how involved they are, how much time they take. You know, one may take only 10 minutes, where another may take 2 or 3 hours. You know, it just really depends on the complexity of their return. Of course, the guidelines of what we can do help that a lot. We can only do certain types of returns, so the complexity can only be so great, you know, as well. So I do think that we'll be able to serve just as many, if not more, people. However, as the program continues to grow, we definitely are going to have to rally volunteers, because we do see an increasing need every single year. And people, the truth is that when people call our office, they're just like with any business, really, they're ready to do something that day. And when they have to wait weeks and weeks, I do hate it that they have to wait. And then, of course, if they want money back, they're going to try to make an appointment, and they may have to pay, you know. And so course, that's their decision to have, you know, go and pay to have it done. But we hate for anybody that feels like they need to do that because they're in a rush to, you know, make that appointment or you know, get in to get their taxes done. So, you know, I think that if we had more volunteers, we'd be able to get people in a little bit quicker. But like I said, we are servicing just as many people, if not a little bit more this year. So I think all in all, the program, it's really doing well this year, even though we've had a few less volunteers. We've just had to ask, I think, a little bit more of our volunteers this year.
You're staffing in three locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so is there any particular location that, I know the Branson area more populated, is that a problem for volunteers more in that area than other areas? Or are you?
Our office here in Forsyth is actually, I think, booked out the longest. So a lot of people actually do come to our office location, and we only have two or three volunteers on Wednesdays at that location. Myself and the site coordinator, and then we do have one other lady that's been there for several weeks as well. So with that, and the Taney County OCAC is the most heavily the busiest location. C of O, we did have an issue with the teacher that was in charge of that program. I think it's a new teacher now, and so they didn't really want to grab hold of the program and really throw it into their curriculum at this point. So that location really had to kind of step back, is the C of O location. Okay.
So people that's listening get some sort of idea. We're doing well over 1,000 now, or?
Well over 1,000, yes.
1,000 tax returns, which is a great benefit to citizens in the county. This is a return on our investment into the university extension as far as the county. So
it definitely is, yes. It touches hundreds and thousands of people,
yes,
here just in the county, and it brings a lot of money back into the county that hopefully people will put back into the county and the businesses here. So,
could you tell me again when that meeting is, when you're going to talk about full-time additional staff person? You said it was this month.
We have a regional staff meet, a regional council and staff meeting, and I believe it'll be up in Springfield, and I think it's March 16th.
Who's the regional director now?
Jay Chisholm is our regional director. And if any of you would like to attend that meeting, you're welcome to do that. At that meeting, you just need to let me know. We will actually look at coverage maps. We'll go through every single program area, how many specialists we have to cover that program area, and how they're dispersed throughout the Southwest region, which specialists cover what. And we'll also look at which specialist areas we don't have anybody in to cover our county. It'll be a really good meeting, and then at that meeting as well, you'll be asked to give input. The people will be asked to give input as to what they would like to see in different counties. So if we do have, we will have a council member present at that regional meeting. But of course, you're always welcome to come to that meeting to give input, because at this point, our county does have room to have a specialist. And so right now, it's really important that we as a county have a voice in this process, because we will definitely benefit. Sometimes that's not always the case. You know, if we didn't have room for a specialist, of course, we would still get the benefit of that specialist if they were located in another county, because we cover multiple counties as specialists. But when we're talking about putting one in our office that, you know, citizen money is going to pay for, definitely the more voice we have, the better.
Would a support letter from the county commission be of any value to you for this meeting as to the specialist? You would write up a support letter for us to sign as a county to present or read?
It would if you had a specific one or two specialist ideas that you would like to make sure got pointed out to the regional director.
Okay. If there's anything like that you need, please bring that forward to
okay.
the county commission and let us agendize it and as a support letter, and we will gladly
okay.
write out of it.
Yeah, at this point, it's really just your ideas and your input, feedback of what you think would really benefit the citizens here in the county, what kind of specialist, what area you would like to see if you have any feedback on that. But it is a very exciting time because we will get somebody in our office to cover the county, so that's really great. I have been at least promised that much. So.
Well, I mean, there's a number of things that come to mind, and I remember when 4-H was big years and years and years ago in this county, and how many young people were involved in that. On the other hand, I also see us moving forward with our partnership in economic development, community development with the cities and the chambers, and so I definitely see a need there that it's important to make the right decision.
Mm-hmm. And our 4-H, I don't report a whole lot on our 4-H group, but we have a really great 4-H group right now. I'll be making sure I include them more and more on my reports, but we have a very active 4-H group right now. I think for the last 2 years they've been kind of rallying their troops, and they're getting more and more active, and they have a, I think it's about a 40 or 50 participant membership at this point. So they really are doing a really great job and have grown their program over the last 2 years.
Excellent.
Serving a lot of children here.
I may mention, Ron, that the new fairgrounds with their future building plans as far as building facilities for 4-H to exhibit their, whether it be livestock or, anything that they have that to exhibit to the public increases the atmosphere for growth of the 4-H department. And I think some work with the fair board on their new location and the possibility of building structures, permanent building structures that can be used for that will be a great addition for that.
I would like some time for the, speaking of that, the fair board to chat with us and or with you and with your organization to see if we can help move that to fruition. That's
a
good idea.
I know the 4-H leader, she has had multiple conversations. I think she's in conversation all the time with the fair board. At our annual dinner last week, we did talk at our short meeting that someone may have a building. So there are conversations around that in the 4-H group. Two of the 4-H leaders are on our council now, our newly elected council, and so we're going to be continuing to talk about that. But they are in conversation with the fair board about either, especially this year, if they're going to try to do a tent or if we are going to be able to have some type of a building or, you know, how that's going to work. So they will have a presence at the fair this year. I'm just not exactly sure what facility they'll be utilizing. So they are working closely with the fair board, and I know that the leader is, I don't know if she's on the board or if she's just working with them, but she is in the midst of all of that planning for the fair already.
And their master plan for the fairgrounds, building facilities are much needed and something that would be of interest to us to help promote through intergovernmental agreements or whatever we have to do with the city or with the fair board.
Okay. I'll let the 4-H leader know, and if there's anything she wants to bring forth, I'll tell her to let Nikki know.
Gentlemen, any questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Crystal.
A great dinner and a great meeting.
I had a 3-year-old preschool production.
I bet it was fun.
It actually was pretty entertaining, uh-huh. So, yeah, sorry.
They usually are. That's okay. Yeah. Yes, Danny, thank you for coming.
I don't have any excuse.
That's right. You weren't in Washington.
Except I was
or
in Washington.
Yeah, Washington's a little
Washington
far away.
That's no excuse.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Nightly rental agreements. Mr. Atchley. Good morning, sir.
Very well. Of course, what we've spoken about here is in December of last year, the Planning Commission requested that the planning staff draft a set of nightly rental amendments. Currently in the code book, nightly rental, which is defined as a residential building, structure, or part thereof, that may be rented for any period of time less than 30 days. Currently, anything that's defined as a nightly rental requires the approval of a special use permit via the Planning Commission. Under the proposed amendments, the Planning Commission wasn't seeking to change that process, but they wanted to further clarify what the requirements would be for a nightly rental as far as occupancy, parking, things of that nature.
Well, I wasn't here, Bob, when this was placed back on the agenda, so I'm assuming that we have some discussion regarding this?
I believe there are some members.
I meant from the commission members.
We didn't have a great deal of discussion last week. That it was decided to be placed back on the agenda. In order to have the full commission in attendance today.
And the reason is to hear more comment from the public or for discussion here?
Both. Okay. Last week we didn't feel it was fair for you not to have an input on something if we did make a decision on something of this, you know.
Are there members of the public here that would like to address this particular issue? Seeing none. No. Just kidding. Would you like to come up, whomever it is that would like to chat about this, please give your name. And we will take all comment that is here today. Morning, Gail.
Good morning. I'm Gail Meyer. What else do you need from me? Need an address?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Well, I will applaud you for addressing this because, you know, lodging, and I'm representing the Branson Lakes Area Lodging Association. I'm on the board. We also have a couple other people, and they may have some comments. And so let me tell you a little bit about the history of this kind of thing in the U.S. and why it's good for you to get ahead of it. First of all, lodging in the county is something greater than 18% of the total economy, something greater than $180 million. So you're going to start to see more and more of this kind of thing, and it runs the whole gamut from those folks who plan residences for nightly rental to the person who's desperate and can't pay his mortgage and decides he wants to rent it nightly and try to get some revenue. And usually when it happens, there's four things that that we want to accomplish when it's related to residential lodging. One is harmony of development. Two is safety and security. Three is tax revenue. Make sure you get the tax revenue. And then four is environmental protection. And in the lodging business, there's this legal term called duty of care. And what that means is if something happened, what would a reasonable person do, and reasonably did we do that? And it's part of being civilized in taking care of folks overnight or for several days. And so what happens is if you want to go back to harmony, you really want to protect the property values of the neighbors. And we're going to talk about this in a minute, but in some cases, and so back up, this is well developed in places like Colorado with ski areas, Florida, where you have lakes. There are districts that you can actually have homes in that can be nightly rental. They've set it up. It becomes very sophisticated. With safety and security, the risk of having an individual in a residence in nightly lodging is greater than it is in a lodging facility like our hotel. It's greater from safety and security, from fire, from monitoring, from theft, from all those kind of things when you get into some sort of a unique and maybe a critical situation. Then tax revenue, you know, what folks have found is that a person will, per se, poo-poo the issue. I have a house. I want to rent it. You know, I need the money. I don't really want to go through all the rigmarole to do it right, okay? And in some cases, that means that the government agency doesn't get tax revenues. And then environmental protection. You need to make sure that trash pickup is appropriate, sewage treatment is appropriate for the amount of visitors, and all those things related to the environment. In Taney County, we'd want to protect the lake. We want to protect the watershed. And in some cases, you want to make sure that the utility services are appropriate for maybe higher occupancy. So what will happen, and what's happened in most of those other areas, is as they grew, if they didn't get ahead of it, the public demanded this. The guy's next door, he's creating a problem. He's devalued my property. Please do something. So it's good for you all to get ahead of that. It's a civilized way to work on harmony. Now, specifically, as I'm looking at what you've got there in 4.7.1, I would tell you that I would change that just not to occupancy. I would change it to nightly occupancy. It gets rid of some technicalities of if I want to invite somebody over for supper, how many people can I invite them? What you're really interested in is how many people are sleeping in that unit. In 4.7.9, I would be confused as to why you would handle someone who has one unit differently than somebody that has two units or two houses that might be in different places in the county with a merchant's license. And also, when it comes to a county inspection or the health inspection, it talks about five units. But if you have a swimming pool, all of the things that happen in my pools today should happen in a swimming pool related to nightly rentals. The proper signage, the proper chemical count, all of those things, or you're going to get people who get sick. And you don't want that to happen. So in some way, you have to manage swimming pools. And then I really think that eventually, and it's probably good to talk about it now, you're way ahead of that game, which is the zone districts. For example, if I went to Breckenridge, Colorado, in Breckenridge, in the town, there are areas in town that I can own residences that can be nightly rentals, and there are areas that cannot. And they know what it is. And that's how they make sure it's done in harmony with the neighbors, per se. The Lodging Association looked at this early on, I think maybe a first draft, and we commented on it. I applaud you for getting ahead of the game. I don't know that you want to over-regulate things. I think, but I do think that it's significant that you understand that the risk to the public is greater in a residence than it is in one of our facilities that's built specifically for lodging. And that's where you can help us protect the public. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
And as you look through, Gail, what's been proposed and what has been approved by planning and zoning, you mentioned we don't want to overburden the public, and we walk as a commission a delicate line here. At least that's the issues that I've heard over the course of the last two or three weeks, is are we in fact overburdening the property owner in rules and regulations? What do you think specifically of, other than what you've laid forth today, what you see as proposed by planning?
You know, I think it's a good start. Okay, so, but forget about the overburdening, and really, if you go back to harmony of development, safety and security, tax revenue, and environmental protection,
Those are all well reasoned. That's duty of care. That's what you want to do. That's civilized. So those are the four things you want to accomplish. Now, if the document accomplishes that for you all, then I think it's a good starting point. There's just some things there that, and I think what I would tell you is you only have to have one. You only have to have one disaster, and then this goes away and it becomes much stricter. And I've seen that happen across the country. And what will that be? Will that be a fire in a residence that everybody's killed? Will it be somebody who drowns in a swimming pool? What will it be? But that's how regulations in our business exist. It's all based on those things that have happened. But if you go back to duty of care, you know, I think it's a good start. And but don't diminish the fact that if you have one unit compared to 30 units, that the one unit doesn't have more risk than possibly the 30 units, mm-hmm. because of monitoring, the oversight that goes into that through either the, as you call, registered agent or the owner itself. So it's do the well-reasoned things, and I think you're on the right track. But those four items are the items that most people believe are well-reasoned and should be taken care of. I don't know if I answered your question. I hope I did. Mm-hmm. I think you're on the right track. I think it's a good start. Yeah. So.
Gentlemen, have questions of Gail? Bob?
No. Thank you.
Okay. Bob, I have a question. In the 4.7.9.
Okay.
To his question of if the applicant owns more than one, why specifically was it this approved in that manner?
I, you know, be open on this. I really had the same question myself. In speaking with the county collector's office, that was the understanding that I obtained from them, was that if there was a single nightly rental, that they wouldn't require a merchant's license. But if an individual owned two nightly rentals, that then they would look upon it as a business requiring a merchant's license.
The question is, if it's operating as a business, is it a business if it's just one?
That's my opinion. Like I said, but I just based this strictly on what the collector's office had indicated.
Okay.
We deal with that constantly through BOE, as you talk in the tax deal. It doesn't make any difference if they've got five units or one unit. If they operate as a nightly rental, and that's 30 days or less, so a business license should be, I mean, if you're a business, you should have a business license, and it shouldn't be, as we set through the month of July and have for years, and we see people that move into a condo or buy a condo specifically for that use, whenever it's brought to their attention that their taxes are appropriated according to that reasoning, they are a business, so they should have a business license. Okay. And I guess and that would take away a lot of the argument that we have people come in all the time that don't understand why that their tax rate is different because they have a nightly rental, whereas they live in a condo right next to it or so on and so forth. So I understand what your question is there. It needs to be corrected in that point.
And you're not forging the wheel here. I mean, there are other places that deal with this very in a large scale. So maybe if you have to deal with those things administratively, it might be worthwhile to find out how those other counties are doing it because they're experts at it. So if you go to Kissimmee, Florida, they've got tons of residents in nightly rentals today, and they manage it. Mm-hmm.
Questions. Other than the three questions that you had, no other improvements that you would see to or language changes that you would see in the regulations?
Not in that draft. I don't know. Those are the three that I pointed out. Now, we may have some others. We may have some, but those are the three. So
this is a large scale. This is a large change on the weight of the scales from what we have now. So I think that public discussion, public input, we've already had our public hearing. We put this off for a vote of the commission because we wanted all three commissioners to be involved instead of just two present, because Ron's visit to NACO, which is very important, but I mean, we didn't want to vote on an issue like this last week. If anyone has any opinion on this, should contact the county commission, because we're fixing to make a move on this motion. So
yeah, and the Lodging Association is supportive of you trying to get ahead of the game as opposed to responding to a tragedy.
All good points. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other members of the public that wish to express an opinion? Sheila, are you here regarding our comments about merchant's license?
I'm not sure what the comments were. Is there a question?
Let me, within the proposal that was approved by Planning and Zoning that has come on to the County Commission, it states under 4.7.9, a valid merchant's license shall be provided to the planning department if the applicant owns more than one nightly rental property. The merchant's license shall be provided prior to the issuance of a certificate of compliance. The question is, why would a merchant's license not be required of P&Z of one nightly rental property rather than multiple?
Well, merchant's license, as you know, is for wholesale manufacturer retail. And at one point, people that own condos, they were not required to have a merchant's license at all. And then I remember one time, used to be the administrator of the city of Branson, went to work for Port Royal, and then he made the requirement that they wanted those condo owners to have a merchant's license. So he was implementing something in there. And at that time, we contacted the State Tax Commission. This part's from memory. I don't have any paper in it. And they didn't feel that they would fall under the qualification that a condo owner would have to have a merchant's license, and that that was something that that organization, the Port Royal, was just setting up as their requirement, and it wasn't a requirement to the county. Then things kind of proceeded along, and the question of commercial property, if they had to pay sales tax or what. So we called for clarification again about 2 years ago, I believe. And as you know, to get a merchant's license, actually the way the statutes read is the assessor makes up a book and charges the collector, then the collector is charging that book to collect those merchant's licenses. And that's not the way that it's ever been done here. It's to the collector to, they go out and with the businesses and see if they're in business, and then they give them the, and we charge the, you know, the merchant's license, send them out a notice. Okay, when we went for clarification again on it, what we got from the state was that if they owned just one condo and they were renting it out, they would not consider them as a business. They would not. But if they were doing it as a business, renting other people's condos out, or if they owned more than that and operated it as a business, not as their condo that they came back and stayed in or sent relatives in or might have leased it out. So that had been the policy ever since then. And we started then working with the assessor's office, giving, because many of these people, see, didn't pay personal taxes. Like if you're commercial property, you're going to be assessed at 32% and as commercial, on part commercial for a condo. But those people were not having to pay personal property taxes. And if you run it as a business, then you come under, in the merchant's license, then you come under the part of paying personal property taxes. So when we do that, when we put them on with a merchant's license, we give the name to the business, personal property, assessor's office, and then they assess them for business personal property. That's kind of, that's the way it's been the for about 2 years.
So the opinion came down from the State Tax Commission?
I called the partitioner.
Have they provided us anything that you could give to the commission and P&Z in writing?
No, the merchant's, I can call and ask, but the merchant's license is kind of a, there's just a few statutes on it. It's just simply if you're wholesale, retail, or manufacturing, and then you determine that, we used to determine it by if they had a sales tax number, or did they sell a product?
Let me take you a different direction. So currently, Taney County is doing what this 4.7.9 calls for. So if it's more than one, we're issuing a merchant's license. If you only have one, we are not. So this is just putting down in writing what the current policy is, Bob. That's your understanding also?
That was my understanding, okay. And that's why it was written that
like
way.
A lot of those are putting in writing what they already do.
Exactly. A lot of this, and you're exactly correct, a lot of this is enumerating really the current policies. But that way, the thought was that
this way there's no misunderstanding for people that are looking at it.
Exactly.
Because it's in print.
And if we had a potential nightly rental applicant, we would have the ability just to hand them something and have them have a clear understanding of what all the requirements are.
And consequently, like the condo owners like that, we do not go out and physically, check, we check, businesses, although we're not going to have time this spring to do that. The condo owners, the way that they are, is if they're in the city limits, the city has required them to have a personal property received to get a merchant's license. If they're requiring, because the city requires licenses that the state and county do not require. Ours is wholesale, manufacturing, retail. If it's any personal service or anything, you're not required until statutes to do that.
Well, one thing I'll throw out there, one thing that we're seeing more and more often is we've got a number of condos that are being rented out nightly. But we've also got a number of private residences where the property owner doesn't reside within Taney County. They've purchased a house strictly looking at it as an investment property, and they're renting it nightly, and they may live in St. Louis or Kansas City or Tulsa. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we're actually seeing more and more frequently is an individual house that's purchased with the sole intent of renting it as an income property. And we're seeing that pretty frequently.
Yeah, gentlemen, I think all of these are coming from condo owners. I think that's where we get into it. Is that not correct? It's not homes. It's people buying condos.
Well, really the way this is defined, it's any residential building that's rented for less than 30 days.
Yeah. I mean, but where we get into it at is usually people that have condos that have... that's when we're usually hearing
about. If this whole issue was brought up from a residential home that was being rented out to large numbers of people, that's where this all was brought forward. In a case that came before P&Z.
And how we'd be made aware of that, that's homes, condos, and all that, how we'd be made aware is if they had to call for a pay tax receipt or something in order during the city limits to get that. And when they do, then we pick up on it and we ask them the questions and then we say, well, you need to have a county merchant's license, you need to be assessed by the assessor. That's the way that it presently works on those.
Additional comments, Bob?
Not that I can think of at this time.
You don't change any of those revisions on there, Ron, as far as recommendations on the three that was
What we have in front of us is a document that's been recommended and approved by Planning and Zoning. Our challenge is either to accept the document and approve it and or not accept the document and approve it. We can approve part of the document. we can make recommendations to Mr. Ashley, who can take it back to planning and zoning. But even for the simple change, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, where it says occupancy, and if the board had decided they wanted to call that nightly occupancy, if I'm not mistaken, do you have to have another public hearing even to do that?
I have gotten two previous legal opinions on that.
Okay.
I had one previous county attorney tell me that if we made any amendments that it would have to be sent back to planning and zoning. I had another one tell me that we could make some amendments at the county commission level, so I've actually gotten mixed opinions on that in the past. I've not run it by our current council, and so because of that, I've always been leery, because like I said, literally I've gotten two opinions on that in the past. So I don't know whether...
What's your thinking about, Bob?
I don't know whether we were...
This is your field.
Should we run it by our current council, or what's...
My question to...
I've always understood as well, and I'll give you an example, just like adding the term nightly to occupancy. I've always been told if it doesn't change the intent... like if we're making a verbiage change or a correction, that definitely doesn't have to go back before planning and zoning. But that's the thing I'm uncertain of, if it's an actual amendment.
Well, but the question is especially with the specific instance that we're having, the problem that we're having with the one house, what is the intent? Is it nightly or is it truly just the occupancy? You got 45 people at one location having parties and weddings and that kind of stuff, right?
Yes.
That's what we heard about from the public a couple weeks ago. Are they all staying the night there? They just have one big party there and then leaving. So then does the nightly not give the intent of what the public was trying to do with that?
Yeah, really with this, that home's being rented pretty much, it's rented on a nightly basis, really, throughout quite a bit of this year, and so this actually would limit things like that. It would limit the occupancy, and
the way I understand it, would limit the nightly occupancy, just the people staying the night. Correct.
Go ahead, Gail.
Well, what happens then is you've got two stop gaps there. One is there should be an occupancy, a maximum occupancy on the building, based on the square footage, but in your case, it's really sewage treatment. What can the sewage treatment handle? And that should give you the maximum, because you've got a plausible situation. I have 40 people there. They meet outside for lunch, or we have a wedding, and then six people stay overnight. And so you have to have some, I mean, it's a great point. You have to have some stop gaps that limit that during the day. Just like I would have a meeting room that could only have 49 people, and that 49 people is based on safety and security. So I agree with you. I think you have to apply safety and security in that at that point to the issue.
And you're exactly correct. The way this is defined, it's allowing two persons per dwelling unit, plus two persons per bedroom, but then it also goes on to say the maximum occupancy should be further limited based upon the capacity of the wastewater treatment system serving the nightly rental unit. And what we've encountered is exactly what you're saying. We've had a number of these that are served by septic systems, either septic systems or on-site wastewater systems, and those are always permitted based on the bedrooms, based on the number of bedrooms. And so if it's a four-bedroom house, for example, the wastewater system would be based on those four bedrooms. And then there's an assumption made in the health department regulations that you'll have up to two people per bedroom. And so that's where these numbers are coming from. Is we're trying to limit people, especially it's not such an issue if they're on public sewer, if they're connected, to the sewer district sewer, but in a lot of these instances, they're renting out homes that are currently served by, like I said, either a septic system or an on-site wastewater system. But and it does get a little confusing with this nightly rental term. It's really referring to any rental that's going to be for less than a 30-day time. So if on an annual basis the primary use of this house is to rent it for periods less than 30 days, our office would look upon it as a nightly rental, even though in reality they may rent it for a week here or 3 days here or 2 weeks to this person. By the definition we have in our code book, it would still look upon it as a nightly rental since it's less than that 30-day period.
Has it been checked to know if the state requires them to have a sales tax number if they're collecting rent from these people? I would assume they could pay in sales tax if they have that sales tax number. Do you know?
That was my understanding in speaking with the state, and I don't recall the person's name that I talked to, but it was my understanding that they would. In fact, the gentleman I talked to even recommended that we require them to issue us a certificate of compliance showing that they were, in fact, paying the state sales taxes, and especially in instances... Which is the primary thing we're encountering, is where they purchased either a home or a condominium, and they don't ever really reside there. They just purchased it solely as income property, basically. And so that was my understanding. They also wanted us to require. They said they would like to have the ability to send a letter that they referred to as a no tax due letter, stating that basically they've paid their sales taxes, that they're up to date, and that type of thing.
Barbara, you guys haven't planned a zoning meeting this week?
Yes. We'll actually have one tonight, and then our next meeting is a week from tonight.
Bob, you have a list of what comments obviously that have been made here today and what's been made in the past. Perhaps if you took those back as a suggestion or recommendation, or at least for comment from the P&Z members, even though many of those changes seem small.
Yes.
And then let us readdress this after the Planning and Zoning Commission has taken them up.
Okay.
Because we have had additional considerations from the public. Now and
in that time, could we get an opinion from our current legal counsel?
Yes. Okay.
Because I would say one of those probably isn't valid.
Any comments? Any other comments from anybody in the public? Danny, Brandon, Bob?
And this might not mean anything, but on the age of 2-year-old being, is that pretty common? Where do they come up with the age of a 2-year-old versus a 3-year or 4-year-old? I mean, how's that?
And
not being considered a...
It says, please note that the term person for the purpose of establishing occupancy is defined as an individual at least 2 years of age.
Well, I just assumed that came from some government agency somewhere. I mean, in
now you know what happens when you assume.
Yeah, well, in reality, you know, think about risk and duty of care. They are a person, and they have more needs in the crisis situation than anybody else.
Right.
So from pure duty of care, are they a person? I just figure that, I don't know, that came from some meeting somewhere else.
So. I'm just thinking, you know, you got a hypothetical situation, you got a family of 5, and you got a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 5-year-old. Yeah. Now you're having to get a 3-bedroom condo instead of a 2-bedroom condo, or nightly rental, or whatever. I mean, does it need to be raised just a little bit to...
You know, here's what I would tell you. So if you're putting them in a room, that child doesn't necessarily require a bed. So I wouldn't count them as an occupant. But do we need to know they're there? And in there you've got address, those things that you require, the license plate. Well, I'm required to do all of those today so that if you have that crisis, you can carry the bucket outside and determine how many people were in the building. So you want to know that that individual is there. From an occupancy standpoint, though, just a pure occupancy standpoint, it probably doesn't make sense to count them.
So again, okay. And that might be something you take to the planning and zoning. Hey, do we need to raise the limit to 4?
Yeah.
Age to 3 okay. or whatever. And then...
Or even have an age. I don't...
Well, if you've got twins, that all of a sudden you have to have... I mean...
I know
to follow the law.
I know what you're saying, but that's the reason.
And
that
no,
is
not
my problem with restricting to over-restriction on these things is you need to know that the person is an occupant, whether they're 1 year old or whether they're 5 years old. Does it need to be in a regulation that we have that they have to have an extra bedroom? See, that's ridiculous. That part of it gets to the point.
Now you're trying to over-govern.
You're trying to... over restrict. So I'd say, Bob, that you need to take that back, some of those questions that have been asked, and then bring it back to the commission.
Would you bring us a report based upon what those findings are?
Oh, definitely. And the commission wishes, I know that the legal counsel has read the current proposal,
right.
But I'll also run
this. Yeah, I just want to know if it has to go back before the plan and zoning, have public meetings or anything. If, as long as it doesn't change the intent, that makes sense. But
definitely.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks again.
We're.
I don't have a clue what for.
Can we move forward very quickly to the parking garage agreement, and then we'll come back to whatever we have here for exec?
Yeah.
Ron, is that you?
Yeah, well.
And then we'll come back to. I'd like to take care of these different orders of business before we.
We were invited, but. I don't have it.
Where are we on this issue?
Well, I've received an email from Paul on last Wednesday, Paul Black with Hoodridge, asking if there had been any movement and if I'd heard anything. And I sent that to Nikki, and then the next thing I know, it's on the agenda here. So.
Didn't we approve it?
Yeah, I mean, the bids had been... awarded, he has submitted, apparently he submitted agreements and paperwork, and he just wants to know if we've acted on it.
Ah, well.
Maybe you got it there.
Here's a letter from counsel. I have reviewed the new proposed contract documents for repairs of the garage to be performed in two phases and approved the documents as to form. Note that Phase 1 documents consist of an agreement, notice to proceed, and call for the work to commence within 10 days and finish within 90 days thereafter, with a contract price of $7,100. Phase 2 documents are the same, and the contract price is $69,448.57.
Is there a motion needed for this agreement to be
we've
in,
already approved
in
it.
Effect? After we've already approved it, Ron? Or is that what they're requesting?
So.
Or I don't think so.
What we have are the documents in front of us. Council, I guess we've waited on council to approve said documents. They've been approved by council. If we've already voted upon them, my assumption is that I could sign. I'll do that with your knowledge here.
Good. I'll let Mr. Black know then that the agreements have been agreed to, signed, and notice to proceed requested by you all.
Let me ask you also, Ron, when you take these documents up to Nikki, that when we are alerted as to when this is going to occur, that we are able to notify all employees that that garage is going to be closed for a period of time, whether it be the short 1 or 2 day period or 3 day period for the minor repair, and then of course the more lengthy overall repairs for the entire garage.
I'll have the architect submit a schedule.
Goes with it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Linda?
I'm not leaving.
Okay. Gentlemen, we're scheduled to go into executive session pursuant to 610.021.3. I'm assuming that's with Linda. That's why I yelled at her. Is that right?
I don't have a clue what it's about.
Personnel?
I'm guessing that's what it is. I'm not sure either, but...
I know she's been here hanging around for a while.
I know.
Oh, it's... It's personnel matter.
It is, okay.
As soon as we get into that, I'm going to ask for a recess to walk around a little bit. My back's killing me.
I would entertain a motion to go into executive session, gentlemen.
Move to go into executive session pursuant to section 610.021.3.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded to go into executive session pursuant to section 610.021, subsection 3. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Brandon, aye.
Brandon, aye. All opposed, say nay. Motion carries. We'll stand into executive session. When we come out, we'll do a work session on future agendas and procedures, and then we'll have the multi-hour Road and Bridge work session this afternoon at 1 o'clock, and we'll stand in recess for just a few minutes while Dan walks.